Hello and welcome to this latest EG podcast, this time on the future of Scottish cities. I'm Damien Wilde. Recorded for our Future of UK Cities Week, this podcast was an enjoyable discussion. As you will be reminded, Scotland has been through more political uncertainty than most in recent years. And if independence becomes a realistic prospect once again, it's clear markets will be better prepared. After all, if IndyRef 1, Brexit and now COVID don't teach you resilience, there really is no hope, is there? I'm joined by a fabulously authoritative panel. Nicola Barclay is Chief Executive of Homes for Scotland. Councillor Jenny Lang is co-leader of Aberdeen City Council. Barry McKeown is partner at Shoesmiths, and Bruce Patrick is from Savills. Welcome all, thank you for joining us. And at home, please don't forget that you can join in the debate online by tweeting with the hashtag EGFutureCities. I say at home, you may be in an office. Some of our panel are, I'm not, but thank you all for joining me today. It's great to see you. We've had some questions pre-submitted, but I've got a few of my own to kick us off. And Bruce and Barry, I'll start with you, if I may, around the market. Many markets around the UK haven't perhaps performed as we might have expected in 2020, with all of these forces bearing down. Some have performed better, some worse. I just wonder where you've both seen resilience and where you've seen pain. Bruce, can I start with you?
Yeah, thanks, Damien. So I think where we're seeing resilience in the market is predominantly around large-scale mixed-use development, which has optionality and flexibility amongst uses, sort of baked into the planning in particular. And I think the sort of dynamic we're seeing at the moment in terms of a trend that's actually identifiable is that we're seeing developers who have large-scale mixed-use developments probably looking to put the commercial elements to one side for the moment. And by that, I mean offices, hotels, service apartments, retail, leisure. So whilst the occupational market considers how we're going to use these sorts of buildings going forward, there's no doubt at all that the residential market is going through a period of quite rapid growth and activity. And I think that stems from people realizing that if they're going to be working from home, they want to work from the very best home that they can afford. And this is all also coming at a time when a large-scale, institutionally funded PRS built-to-rent is coming to the Scottish markets, certainly in Glasgow, it's coming in Edinburgh. And that is also helping to push forward some of our large-scale mixed-use development sites.
So whatever the question, the answer is increasingly residential, Bruce. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. I think the other market where we can see some activity is on the office market. And that is a factor of both Glasgow and Edinburgh markets at the moment are very significantly undersupplied in terms of prime grade offices. We've seen in Edinburgh, for example, Billy Gifford take an enormous pre-let at Haymarket. And that should give people confidence that, you know, if a global fund manager of Billy Gifford's repute is prepared to go and take effectively, you know, their global headquarters in Edinburgh of such significant size, that, you know, these guys are saying, look, we need a headquarter office building for all our staff to get together and collaborate. So I think that the office market, which is undersupplied, is that there's still activity there. There's still investors buying, particularly into the Edinburgh market, because the shortage there is seen as being so acute. Glasgow has seen some activity in the office market, investment market. But again, what we're also seeing is some older stock actually now being bought and by developers looking to develop, for example, for PRS built to rent. So an interesting time. I think prime offices in both cities in demand, but I think we're seeing new and alternative uses coming in, perhaps to look to redevelop some of these older buildings.
Okay, thank you. And Barry, same question to you around resilience and pain. And I guess given your involvement in many high profile built to rent deals, rather, you're busier than ever.
would echo a lot of what Bruce was saying there in terms of the areas where we are seeing activity coming across our desks, both over the summer and sort of pipeline going forward, that the residential market or schemes with a residential element have certainly been the ones which have been pushed on, and the more core single-use investment deals have really slowed down. The market is still has some activity on the investment side, but the deals I think are far more few and far between, and I think are getting press just for the fact that a deal happens rather than anything of specific significance sometimes. Across Scotland, I think our activity levels have been in the mainstream house building sector, with all of the house builders since the sort of return to work earlier in the summer and the sites reopening have been pushing on with completion on sites, and our plot sales teams have been very busy. Last month was a record year or record month for our plot sales teams in terms of reservations and completions. And we're also seeing a lot of large scale build to rent. As Bruce mentioned, conversion from existing office use, I think, is going to be key, particularly around the sort of urbanisation of our city centres and the refocusing of the space that we provide in our city centres, I think, is one of the key areas. And I think that has certainly led to a lot of projects being reassessed in the light of the sort of demand for the residential-led scheme.
Okay. And have you seen areas of which have slowed considerably as well?
I think certainly in the investment deals for UK investors, I think have slowed. There's still some overseas investment, still opportunities. The retail market, the only real activity is around restructuring and asset management. So hotels, leisure, retail investments, not really performing at all, not moving at all. We've been very busy on a whole lot of restructuring deals with major retailers over the summer, which has involved considerable sort of manpower renegotiating and regearing leases across the UK, and that's kept our teams busy.
Okay, thank you. And Nicola, to bring you in, plenty of talk of residential there, but the experience of the last several months hasn't made delivery any easier. And I just wonder whether momentum has been able to be kept up as you sort of home in on that target of 25,000 new homes of all tenures each year.
Well, we had built up fantastic momentum over the last couple of years, and this year the stats came out for the 2019 figures, and we actually got over 22,000 homes built in Scotland in 2019. So we were on track for a brilliant upsurge in delivery. And of course, COVID then hit in March. So we have had a real challenge from March to June with all our sites closing. But the stats that we're getting in now is that we're really only about 4% off completions that we were in last year. So guys have really worked hard to build back the numbers that they were delivering. As Barry says, the sales have been phenomenal. I think with everybody being locked down in their own houses, they've really taken a look at their own four walls and thought, is this right for me? Or do we need a larger house? Do I need dedicated office space within my house? Do I need a larger garden? So those who have been able to have been looking to move to larger, maybe to further out of town, which is interesting in this topic of future of cities, more people moving out of the cities or out of the towns into more rural locations because they don't necessarily have to commute into work every day. So you can make a slightly different decision about your home location. Of course, that's for those people who can afford to. Our members are delivering homes across all tenures. So we have to make sure that we offer options for those who don't have that luxury. But it certainly has been very, very busy since June, right across the board, trying to get sites out the ground and get people moved in.
And does that apply to all tenures as well? Are we seeing build to rent grow as quickly as it had been? Has that momentum stayed?
I think build to rent still has a slight challenge getting through the planning system. It's still a tenure that's not fully understood. We are making a lot of progress, certainly within Edinburgh and Glasgow, but the majority of my membership build homes, private homes for sale, or affordable homes for rent, and also the mid-market rent side of the market. So they are all moving at pace. Scottish Government put a lot of money in for affordable housing delivery, and they're very keen for that money to be spent. So there is a lot of momentum there, and you know, majority of the councils, I'm sure we'll hear from Jenny in a minute, a lot of the councils really pushing hard to get these sites through the system so people can move into their homes as soon as they can.
Okay, and just before I bring in Jenny, to latch on to one thing you did say there and one thing I teed up in the intro, that perhaps that drive towards ever greater urbanisation isn't the given that we thought it was. It sounds like you're seeing evidence of a reversal there.
Yeah, sorry, I think we're beginning to see a real kind of divergence in the market. Those people who can move further out of the cities are choosing to do so. But that's obviously only a small proportion of the population. I think we're going to have to look really carefully at the connecting infrastructure. How do we move people in and out of cities if they are choosing to move further out? Maybe if we were having this conversation a year ago, we would be talking about the densification of cities and livable cities. But we are definitely seeing people choosing, because of COVID and the lockdown and having to work from home, people are now making a decision to move further out. And that brings its own challenges in terms of traffic and infrastructure and accessibility to really high speed internet, all of those kind of things, which were already a challenge, but I think they're just going to accelerate some of those conversations.
Okay, thank you. And Jenny, can I bring you in? A lot of the issues that we're talking about there, you're wrestling with as well, all of the issues you're wrestling with are from a, you know, a slightly different perspective, the public sector perspective. And I wonder whether you feel, before we get into some of those issues, whether you feel that the public and private sectors are working together more effectively as a result of this crisis, perhaps?
I have to say that particularly in the Aberdeen and North East area, I think we've always had a very strong public-private sector relationship. And that has, you know, I think we're building on that as we move forward. You know, I think about our own house building programme that we have as a local authority, a fairly ambitious target was set of 2,000 new council homes in the five-year tenure that, you know, we're currently in. And a part of that is obviously about us developing our own sites and bringing in, you know, development partners for that. But we've also put a call out to developers with their sites to bring forward schemes that we are looking at to deliver as well. So in that aspect, I think we've always made sure that we're trying to work hand in hand with the private sector. About repurposing the city centre, you know, I think we've been trying, like many cities, over recent years to try and make sure that we can get more people living and working within the city centre itself in particular. And that's why we've, you know, we brought forward proposals and, you know, plans that allow for the waiving of the affordable contribution within Aberdeen city centre. Affordable homes contribution in order to try and stimulate that market and allow developers to, you know, for their construction to be more cost effective as a result of that. So I think COVID-19 certainly has reset things because of the uncertainty that it's thrown up around that, you know, what are the future of city centres in particular, you know, and I'm interested in Nicola's point of view about people making choices now maybe to live further away. But I think in Aberdeen in particular, that travel to work area has been fairly extensive for many years now because of the high prices within the city and the costs, particularly in relation to housing. And I think we may well have an opportunity to reset some of that as we move forward. But as Nicola's pointed out, that connectivity aspect, whether it's around transport connectivity or digital connectivity, will be hugely important as to whether that shift continues, or indeed we can repurpose and get more people actually living within the city centre itself.
So that reset's interesting, and it's at the heart of some of the questions that have come in from our audience already. So I'll move on to those. But Jenny, I just wonder if I can get you to explore the reset a little bit more. By reset, do you mean try and make homes more affordable within the city centre, drive up occupation within the city centre, drive up dwelling within the city centre? And does that mean converting more offices, more retail, more leisure space, perhaps to residential space?
Yeah, I mean, I think it ultimately does mean it's repurposing the areas that we have within the city. And I'll take an example as Union Street, which is obviously our main thoroughfare, which, for many years has been that retail central hub. But I think even before COVID, we understood that retail aspect was changing significantly in the way people, buy goods, how they deal with that, internet use and various other things. So we had looked at ways in which we could reuse the properties that we had within Union Street. Now, they're not within our direct control because the vast majority are in private hands, but it's about us bringing in, I mentioned there about the waiving of the affordable housing contribution within the city centre, and particularly in Union Street, to try and stimulate that market and get people looking at the conversion of the upper floors of that street back into residential use as they've been previously. And it's about us making sure that we can put those incentives on the table for the private sector to come forward with plans. But it's also about us, I mentioned there about our house building programme. It's about us creating a gold standard within those houses that allow people to work from home more often. It allows them to deal with life, and particularly post-COVID, I think, in aspects of creating an environment that, if people are having to spend greater amounts of time within their own homes, how do we make sure that the facilities that we are building and bringing to the market meet the needs of them going forward?
Okay, thank you. I'm going to stick with that word reset, because the questions that have come in from our audience, they are all driven by a reset, perhaps. And I'll start with the big one, which will surprise none of you, I'm sure, which is from Martin Devine at Pinsent Masons. Could recovering Scottish cities cope with the additional uncertainty which would be caused by another independence referendum at this time? And two Scottish cities, I'll add Scottish companies. Bruce, you and I have talked about this on platforms a number of times in the past. What's your view?
My firm view is that the market and occupiers will cope with it as they have done before, and we've been here before.
Perhaps more so. Do you think? Do you think there's been we've all had a lesson in resilience?
Well, I think that we, I think that the Scottish market has become used over the last decade to perhaps more obstacles or speed bumps than it has normally had to cope with. And obviously, I think that the great financial crash, in terms of its immediate impact on the Scottish market, looks at the moment to have been, have had a greater overall effect, certainly with regards to Scottish developers and investors. I think the big impact now is having on occupiers, particularly hotel, retail, and leisure occupiers. So this crisis that we're currently facing is more perhaps occupational led, and I have to say that the prospect of a referendum, I suppose, is going to be precipitated on the back of the SNP having some sort of significant majority at the May elections next year, and then somehow convincing Boris and Co that we should have another referendum. So I think the hope is that if there is to be another referendum, it's far enough in the future that hopefully we're through COVID and we're not having to deal with multiple speed bumps at the same time.
Okay, so that's the company view there, Bruce, or the view from Scotland PLC, if you like. Scottish cities, do you think there's an additional pressure there, or does the same apply?
I think in terms of Scottish cities, what Scottish cities definitely have to do post-COVID is find a way to bounce back as quickly as possible. And the way, I suppose, that we look at it from a development perspective is similar to the reason to get back into the office. The reason to get back into the office is to collaborate, to sit down and speak with your colleagues, to have a team ethos, and get that sort of collective enthusiasm about what you do. And I think the best things about cities are the same. So, you know, the best thing about the city is that it's got a sort of spontaneous, event-led nature, where you can go into town and you know, for an afternoon, and you don't know what might happen. You meet some friends, you go out for dinner, you go out for lunch, you go out for beers, you go to the cinema, you go and see a show, you go and hear some music. And I think cities are inherently resilient. I think Glasgow and Edinburgh and Aberdeen, all of which have the benefit of not just a local economy, but an international economy and tourism as well, are especially resilient in a UK context. And, you know, if there is to be a further referendum, then I think there will be a further period where perhaps markets are unsettled, people delay or defer taking big decisions. But to be honest with you, I do feel as though we've been here before. I think the more dramatic impact might be that if Scotland votes yes, then there will be I think that would be quite hard to call what the impact of that might be.
Okay, thank you. And Nicola, is it something that your members discuss regularly, more regularly now, I wonder?
We have a very diverse membership. Some love to have a chat about the political sphere and what's going on, these broader macro issues. But in general, they want to be building houses. And they will do that within whichever political arena that they're doing it. So I don't think that independence and the prospect of another referendum is really on their radar, particularly at the moment. It's there in the back burner. Effectively, like Brexit is, they will deal with whatever cards are thrown at them. The one thing that I know about this industry, it is incredibly resilient. We saw how many companies did manage to bounce back after the 2008 crash, and carried on driving forward and leading their companies forward. There were mergers and acquisitions, and yes, there were some that did fall by the wayside. Unfortunately, the SME sector has been hardest hit. And, you know, who knows what, you know, the future holds for Scotland. And if it does become an independent country, you know, our job, you know, working with government, working with politicians to get the best possible policy environment for our members will continue unabated. So much of planning and housing and the built environment is already devolved to Holyrood. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference to us and the job that we have to do. So much of that lobbying work and engagement work happens at local council level, of which we have a multitude of parties leading these councils anyway. So, as I say, the house building industry is pretty resilient and will work in whichever policy framework we have to work in.
Okay, thank you. And Jenny, the question was around Scottish cities. Could recovering Scottish cities cope with the additional uncertainty? Is it something that you and your peers discuss regularly? And is there a plan in place?
I have to say that a further independence referendum, I think, is the last thing that we need. I mean, I'll talk in terms of Aberdeen, but, you know, I think this goes across the board. In Aberdeen, we've been disproportionately affected, I would say, by COVID-19. And, you know, we've seen the drop in the oil price and the impact that it's had on the oil and gas sector, which obviously dominates our economy. Now, that economic shock, you know, has going to have to be tackled, and it's going to take a collaborative approach, I would say, and that focus, you know, I think we need to be channeling all our energies into the socio and economic recovery plans that, you know, like Aberdeen, I'm sure other cities have got in place, rather than dealing with more constitutional questions. And, you know, Nicola's mentioned there about, you know, the fact that, you know, her members are negotiating with local authorities on that level. And, you know, and that's quite right. But we can't get away from the fact that local government is funded, you know, directly by central government. And it's about where that finance and resource is channeled moving forward. And, you know, I would argue that it needs to be channeled into the delivery of those services and that economic recovery, rather than into fighting another independence referendum and, you know, the finances and resource that goes towards that. But I'll maybe just touch on one experience that we had, you know, following the last referendum, because you'll be aware that Aberdeen, you know, is unique in Scotland anyway, that we have issued a, you know, we have a credit rating and we issued a bond on the stock exchange. And when we were pitching for investors around that, one of the main questions that they asked us was about what impact independence would have. And, you know, there was uncertainty there around what the future might hold if that was the case. So much so that it was written into those bond agreements that repayment would be made to the investors if independence was agreed later on. So I think that shows that, you know, we didn't have any similar terms in relation to Brexit, but we did with the independence question. So I think that clearly shows that about investor confidence, there can be, you know, it can be unsettling, the continual constitutional questions that we have. And I think we've seen that not just with the bond issue, but when we've attended things like MIFM, where we're looking for that investor confidence, that often the independence question is something that's discussed at all of these levels. And I think we need to bear that in mind as we're moving forward and looking at what the recovery of cities will be. Because at the end of the day, Aberdeen has always played in heavily into the national economy, whether at a Scottish or UK level. And what we need is a strong economy in Aberdeen that's continuing to pay into that tax base, which then helps other areas within the UK as well. So, you know, that would be my perspective of whether we could, you know, we should be looking at another independence referendum, particularly at this time.
Okay, thank you. We could devote a whole session to that, and perhaps we will in the future. But I just wanted to bring in one last issue in the few minutes that we have left, from Jenny Montgomery of Barton Willmore. And Barry, I'll start with you on this. And if I could ask you, each of you, to be brief, please. With the drive towards net zero carbon across Scottish cities, and most notably in Edinburgh, what does the panel feel the review of the presumption in favour of sustainable clause might mean? Barry?
Yeah, I think to answer the question itself, I think there is no doubt that it certainly does have and will have an impact on sustainable development. My view is that what we're seeing is a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to an individual planning decision, but is an issue in terms of the underlying Scottish planning policy that has been within the Scottish Government for a good number of years, or something they've been keen to remove. But I do think that we're in danger here of having a completely mixed message from central government, where on one hand we're talking about a green recovery and the promotion of sustainable development as a way of building our way out of COVID-19, but on the other hand removing a very current enshrined policy within Scottish planning policy, which is designed to promote that and see sustainable developments being brought forward. So I don't understand the rationale for it, other than a sort of, as I said, a knee-jerk reaction to an individual decision.
Bruce, what's your view, quickly?
Yeah, so quickly, and I have to confess, I had a word with my planning team on this very matter. And they've got quite strong opinions on it, as you might expect. So their view is that the sort of Planning Scotland Act sets out, you know, certain guidelines that planning is in the long-term public interest, and sustainable development is part of that. And so sustainable development can be seen as a sort of one of the primary reasons for planning as a statutory function. So then taking the presumption in favour of sustainable planning away seems to be sort of at odds with the central purpose of it. And I think one of their main sort of technical issues that they have is that the presumption coupled with some of the other changes in legislation means that the ability of development management planners can become fettered. And this could see them, for example, if the development plan becomes outdated over a period of time, then it could mean that a development management planner doesn't have the ability to grant a consent that may be at odds with the plan, but is actually delivering sustainable development. So in that sense, it just seems it seems like a real sort of mixed message.
Okay, thank you. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to leave it there. I've got a voice in my ear telling me to wrap this up now. But that was a fascinating discussion. And thank you all for listening. Thank you to those who sent in questions. I didn't quite have time to cover them all, but we got most of the way through there. But thank you especially to our panelists. Do look out for online coverage with videos and podcasts throughout the week and print coverage on the 13th of November.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the EG Property Podcast. We hope you found the content insightful and helpful. If you'd like more of the same and to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, be sure to sign up to all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.